The following is a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its owners, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.
Money Talks, the show that gives you the tools to navigate a challenging economy, help you build and protect your wealth, and provide timely news and information to manage your money. Here's the host of Money Talks, Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group on 1590 WAKR.
Well, Sandy, I don't know if we should be saying ho, 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 or beach music by the Beach Boys with the weather we're having out there.
I know, it is downright balmy. For us this time of year, yeah. Now, if this was July, we'd be complaining because it was too cold, but wow, I'm liking it. I like it a lot.
I mean, it's like, you know, last year and what the Farmer's Almanac said, where's the snow? Where's the cold?
Yeah, I know. There you go, this brutal winter. Oh, I can. If this is a brutal winter, I want one every year. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we got a Christmas gift from, I don't know who, the oil companies are now Santa Claus, because gas was real cheap, so we could all go traveling around.
Yeah.
It actually turned out to be kind of a good Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can always spray snow out of a can if you need to see it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I can't believe that it's already over.
I thought of you when I heard the news this week, too, because, you know, we've had this recession thing going on, and I guess Russia's, you know, just plummeting into recession. So Vladimir Putin, in his infinite wisdom, is asking women to use beetroot instead of lipstick to save money and save, you know, resources. And he's going to start subsidizing vodka so the vodka prices don't go through the roof. So I guess we'll have everybody just in a stupor over there so they won't know what's going on. I don't know. But I thought, well, you know, maybe he's on to something. Maybe we should have tried that.
I don't know. But he is getting hurt. But good morning, everyone. I am your host, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. This is Money Talks, and thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning, 2 days after Christmas, the 27th day of December, as we get ready now for the next holiday, the New Year's Day. And if we take a look at the markets this week, they were on a good roll as we first broke over the 18,000 mark on the Dow Jones for the first time in history. Closed up 23 points yesterday at 18,053. The NASDAQ closed up 33 points and closed at its 12-year high at this point at 14-year high at 4806. It's getting very close to that 5,000 mark. If you remember, way back in March of 2000, it closed over 5,000. And the S&P 500, well, it closed up just under 7 points to close at 2,088, getting very close yesterday to that 2,100 mark, which it will probably cross before the end of the year. We do have a few trading days left next week before the new year, so I wouldn't be surprised to see it close over 2,100. In the other markets, we saw that natural gas was down another 2 cents to close down at $3.01. per BTU. We saw oil, the West Texas Intermediate closed down $1.11 to $54.73. The Brent crude closed down 79 cents to close at $59.45. Gas futures were down 4 cents to $1.50. And at the pumps, all down West Market Street here, $2.05. Now, what's really strange is if you go around the area here, on this side of town, it's $2.05. Go over to the Falls, it's higher. Various other parts around the region here, it seems to be higher. Don't know exactly the reason why, but it is nice to finally in this area to have it down at the lowest at 205. We heard that there are some stations up in Cleveland. They're under $2. And certainly at this pace, we'll see it break through that $2 mark in this area for us. Gold down up $21.80, closed at $1,195.30 an ounce. Silver was up 43 cents yesterday, closed at $16.15. The VIX, the volatility index, up 13 cents, closed at $14.50. And in the bond market, the 2-year bond now sits at 0.74%, the 5-year at 1.76%, the 10-year at 2.25%, and the 30-year 3.82%. In the news this week, of course, we saw that the NAR said that existing home sales tumbled 6.1% to a seasonally adjusted rate of 4.93 million in November after climbing 1.4% to 5.25 million in October. We also saw that the Commerce Department said its final reading on third quarter GDP showed a 5% increase. That's right, 5% compared to the previous estimate of just 3.9%. Economists had been expecting that pace to increase up to 4.3%. So that was an unexpected surprise and certainly did help move the markets forward. Durable goods report orders fell by 0.7% in November compared to a 0.3% increase in October. And again, with the markets, we saw the 18,000 number breached by the Dow, 2,100 coming real close in the S&P, and we're getting ever so close to a new high in the NASDAQ also. Oil prices, as we take a look at those, you know, you hear a lot of conflicting reports out there. And basically, from my seat, what I see is that, as with everything, follow the 80-20 rule. I think with the lower oil prices, you're going to see 80% good things happen, 20% bad things happen out of it. If we take a look at some of the winners and losers here, and this was reported by Business Week this past, or I'm sorry, Zacks this past week. Let's take a look at oil producers and energy companies. At this point, this particular point, we have a neutral rating. Energy company profits rely on prices, not volumes, so the recent slide has hurt, and energy stocks have taken a hit. But as investors, well, you can't focus on what's already happened. You have to focus on what lies ahead. Zacks sees oil prices stabilizing in the $50 to $70 range and eventually ticking back up as Europe's recovery takes hold and global growth exceeds expectations. Best to hang tight is their recommendation. Taking a look at materials and industrials, they're positive. Input costs are declining, which means improving margins. China's shift from industrialization neutralizes this effect to a degree, but there is more to the infrastructure and industrial story than just China. Emerging markets are still a force for buildouts. Consumer staples, they put it positive. Lower input prices and stronger dollar make goods more affordable. The United States, this is a positive thing, is the world's largest consumer of oil. The U.S. is the country that benefits the most from lower oil prices. This trend also means it is much less likely that inflation will begin to materialize. Lower inflation indicates lower interest rates, which is good for almost all financial assets. China, well, they're positive. China is using this opportunity to stockpile oil, which will benefit it down the road if prices start to trickle up again. It's also good timing, too, as China undergoes structural transitions. Net oil exporters, well, of course, that's a negative. This applies to countries like Russia and Venezuela, where a huge portion of their economies are tied to the energy sector. Unlike the U.S., these countries can't afford to wait out a cyclical downturn in energy prices. And consumer discretionary, well, it's a neutral rating by Zacks. Saving a few dollars at the pump doesn't translate as big of a pop for consumer spending as many may think. The spending economy is $11 trillion, so a few hundred billion extra won't cause much of a ripple. And these are kind of the outlooks for Zacks with the winners and losers on oil. And as you can see, mostly positive. Myself, nothing like going to the pump, filling up my gas tank at $2 a gallon versus $4 a gallon. I'll take the 50% decrease of what we were paying earlier this year anytime. And with that, we've got some pretty interesting things to cover today, so stay with us. Grab yourself a nice warm cup of coffee, and we'll be right back after these commercial breaks.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back on this Saturday morning. Well, let's get some of the news items out of the way. We did see this past week we finally have a date of which the Supreme Court is going to listen to the case of Obamacare that's going to come up on March the 4th. They should have a decision out by June. And as the Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell was asked on Tuesday repeatedly, trying to figure out what happens if the Supreme Court comes down with a negative decision. She really did not want to respond to that. There was no contingency plan. As mentioned by the article, healthcare.gov enrollees have a right to know that their premiums could quadruple, that is right, quadruple by June and be on the hook for a $5,000 tax liability if the Supreme Court comes out with a negative decision. Basically, what this comes down to, there's 37 states who are not in the national program, thereby, by this suit, are not entitled to give the subsidies to the families that qualify under the federal program. Under the federal program, the federal poverty level is $23,850 for a single adult, $95,400 for a family of four. If you fall below those numbers, you are entitled to subsidies. Well, the case before the Supreme Court is the families or individuals in those 37 states, since they are not part of the national program, would not be entitled to those subsidies. So certainly, we're going to take a look at this and see what happens. According to the article, about 85% of healthcare.gov's current 6.7 million customers receive federal tax credits and help them pay their 2014 insurance premiums. Many of these low and middle income people would find that the retail cost of the plans would be unaffordable or not to bother to buy those plans without these subsidies. So this is going to be a major decision by the Supreme Court. And certainly if they do come down with a negative decision and find that these are not allowed, this is going to change the whole landscaping when it comes to healthcare in this country once again, as if things are not already confusing, disruptive, and already have caused a lot of pain for many individual Americans out there. The next thing we want to look at, we've talked about with the bill that these Congress passed a couple weeks ago, with the debt ceiling bill. We have more information pertaining to the pension provision in here. This was an article that came down this week. More than a million current and retired truck drivers, construction workers, and other union employees could see their pension benefits cut now that Congress has passed the controversial new measure. Aimed at saving some of the country's largest pension funds from the brink, the law will allow multi-employer pensions plans that are projected to become insolvent in the next 10 to 20 years to cut benefits of both current and future retirees. By allowing the plan to cut benefits now, lawmakers say it will help to keep around 150 pension funds from running out of money. But retirees aren't exactly seeing it that way. Many gave up years of pay increases and contributed thousands of dollars from their salaries each year toward their promised pensions, and as a result may have little savings outside of their pension benefits and Social Security checks, and they're not sure how they're going to make ends meet. In the worst-case scenario, for example, one individual here could see his current annual benefits of around $37,000 a year reduced down to as little as $15,000. He receives his checks from Central States Southeast and Central West Areas Pension Fund, and that's a fund that is now qualified to cut benefits under the law. Central States lobbied heavily for the new pension-cutting measure, which has led many of its retirees to speculate it will be one of the first plans to reduce benefits. Basically, however, any cuts could ultimately require government approval, and benefits also cannot be cut for those with disability pensions or those who are 80 years old and older. That is part of the agreement, while cuts could be much less severe for those between the ages of 75 and 80. But basically, this is a big problem. And what we're seeing here is that a lot of these pensions are going to be reducing payouts. We've also noticed, for example, by the rules, if a multi-employer pension plan goes insolvent, A retiree is guaranteed less than $13,000 a year from the Pension Benefit Guaranty Corp. In contrast, a retiree in a single employer plan that goes bust is insured for up to $60,000. So who, of course, lobbied the Congress to do this? Well, the unions did, of course. And the unions then got to help to write the bill that went in there, and this is where we're at, and we're going to see that the people are going to start to see pensions reduced. Probably in some cases, I would say in a majority of cases, you won't start to see this for about a year as they go through some of the some of the actuarial tables, work things out, and get things set up the way that they want. And then, of course, as we mentioned before, once they go ahead and they start this and they reduce pensions, should they find that the environment, although it's been bad since, 2008 and 2009 were not very good, they were underfunded heavily at that point because investments did poor. Well, if their investments were to do very well over the next 10 years, even though your pension benefits were reduced, well, you're not going to get them back. And you can't sue them because the fiduciary rule does not apply anymore. And so they can pretty much indiscriminately determine who and when and how much. So we'll continue to update this as we find out more. I don't like this at all. I don't like what it's doing to the people out there that have their pensions already coming in. Most of the time, the way things are done is, it's for new retirees or it's for new people coming on. Insurance companies, it's for new people that they enroll. It's not usually for people get grandfathered in, is what I'm trying to say a lot of times. And in this case, not going to be the case. So we'll certainly keep you updated. We'll let you know what's going on as we hear more. And let's hope for the best on this, that people don't get their pensions cut by too much. And with that, we'll be back after these commercial breaks for the joke of the week.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week. And this week, Sandy, it's about Bob. Bob received a parrot for his birthday. The parrot was fully grown with a bad attitude and a worse vocabulary. Every other word was a curse word. Well, those that weren't curse words were, to say the least, rude. Bob tried hard to change the bird's attitude and was constantly saying polite words, playing soft music, doing anything he could think of to try and set a good example. Well, nothing worked. He yelled at the bird, and the bird got worse. He shook the bird, and the bird became angrier and ruder. Finally, in a moment of desperation, Bob put the parrot in the freezer. Well, for a few moments, he heard the bird squawking and cursing, and then suddenly there was quiet. Bob was afraid that he'd actually hurt the bird and quickly opened the freezer door. The parrot calmly stepped out onto Bob's extended arm and said, "I'm sorry that I might have offended you with my language and actions, and ask for your forgiveness. I will endeavor to correct my behavior." Well, Bob was astonished at the bird's change in attitude and was about to ask what had made such a drastic change when the parrot finally said, "Sir, may I ask what the chicken did?"
Oh.
If you're scratching your head, you'll get it in a second.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder he came out so polite. Oh, my. Anyway, as we get into the end of the year, first of the year here, it's always nice to look at some things that help us to improve ourselves and, of course, things that always translate and reflect on money as we try to talk about that. Some incredible benefits of getting more sleep. I read this article and I wanted to share it because there's some things in here that I didn't know, and it was very interesting, and so I thought I wanted to share it with our radio listeners. This is basically the article talks about that our sleep problems are so bad that the CDC refers to them as a public health epidemic. Now, while a tiny percentage of the population does fine on little sleep, those people are incredibly rare. About half the population doesn't get enough sleep, and 40% of people sleep less than the recommended 7 to 9 hours a night. Teens and children need even more. Sleeping too much isn't good for you either and comes with its own health risks, but only 5% of people sleep more than 9 hours a night. For at least 40% of the U.S. population, getting more sleep would make our lives so much better. And here's how. Number one is you'll be happier. Sleeping poorly ruins your day. Well, you know that. Researchers have shown it, too, especially in one notable study that followed 909 working women. A poor night's rest affected their happiness as much as tight work deadlines. And it had even a bigger impact on the mood and significant income differences in the group. You'll be able to build muscle more easily. There's reason that fitness magazines and forums always focus on the importance of sleep. If you don't sleep, you can't build muscle. Your body uses most of the night, except when you're in your REM sleep, to heal damage done to your cells and tissues when you're awake and more metabolically active. At the start of the night and during slow wave sleep, your body also releases growth hormone. Lack of sleep, on the other hand, is linked to muscle atrophy. Well, how about short-term memory? Researchers have found and had adults do a task once, get a good night's sleep, and then try the task again. They showed improvement. But participants who stayed awake 30 hours after learning the same task had a much harder time improving their skills. Even if they practiced and had a chance to catch some recovery shut-eye later, something about the initial sleep deprivation impaired their ability to learn. Of course, letting kids get enough sleep is important too. In one case, starting schools an hour later at 8:30 instead of 7:30 in this example increased standardized test scores by at least 2 percentile points. You'll be better and a safer driver, it says. Driving sleepy is like driving drunk. Both are common causes of serious injuries, and in tests, sleep-deprived drivers perform like alcohol-impaired drivers. Drowsy driving is responsible for 100,000 crashes and 1,500 deaths every year, according to the National Sleep Foundation. Almost 20% of serious injuries and crashes happen when there's a sleepy driver involved. Well, it's one of the best ways to stay fit. Multiple studies show that people who sleep less are more likely to be obese. One study that followed 500 people for 13 years found that people who regularly slept less than 7 hours a night were 7.5 times more likely to be overweight, even after controlling for physical activity, family history, and demographic factors. Researchers think this is mostly due to hormonal changes caused by sleep deprivation. Not getting enough sleep stimulates your appetite. Basically, one of the most effective diet hacks possible is just getting enough sleep. Well, people who don't sleep enough are more likely to develop diabetes, the article says, even if they're skinny. Type 2 diabetes is an awful disease that leads to strokes, amputations, blindness, and organ damage, and this isn't just about obesity. So if you're skinny but don't get enough sleep, this still applies. Otherwise, healthy adults lose their ability to control blood sugar without getting enough sleep, and the less sleep someone gets, the more likely they are to develop a problem. Compared to adults who sleep 7 to 8 hours per night, people who sleep 6 hours are 1.7 times as likely to develop diabetes, and people who sleep 5 hours are 2.5 times more likely to develop diabetes. People who sleep enough have better moods and fewer problems with depression and anxiety. People who sleep less tend to have more symptoms of depression, lower self-esteem, and more anxiety than those that sleep like they should. Still, a review of studies shows that sleep loss has even stronger effect on mood than it does on cognitive ability or motor function, which is a strong indicator that sleeping more could help. People who get more sleep have healthier skin. Along with mood disorders, sleeping poorly is also associated with chronic skin conditions. Some research shows that poor sleep, depression, anxiety, and chronic skin problems all go together. Well, you'll be less likely to make risky financial decisions. When people are tired, well, the way they make financial decisions changes. Instead of trying to minimize loss, they start looking for risky big gains. There's a good reason to make sure you sleep before making a big purchase. And it also raises some questions about the insane hours that some Wall Street employees log. You'll spend less time and money at the doctor. Well, here's a good reason to sleep more. People who score high on a sleeplessness scale use 11% more healthcare resources than their well-rested brethren. Sleep troubles caused by sleep apnea and insomnia cost U.S. billions of dollars in direct medical costs every year, and that's even before taking into account the associated lost productivity. Adolescents who sleep enough are less likely to abuse alcohol. According to the Institute of Medicine, sleep problems are associated with alcohol abuse. Adolescents who have sleeping problems are more likely to develop problems abusing alcohol, though it's also true that people who abuse alcohol have sleeping trouble as well. Still, researchers believe that having a disrupted rhythm causes changes in the reward system of the brain. This, in turn, makes those adolescents more likely to engage in risky behavior and to develop alcohol disorders. Sleeping also will make it easier to speak. We know that people who drive tired are similar to those who drive drunk. But did you know that staying awake too long can cause slurred speech, repetitive word usage, and a slow, monotonous tone? So make sure that you get some rest before your next presentation. Getting enough sleep helps to prevent migraines and other headaches. If you find yourself cringing due to sudden head pain, look at your sleep schedule. Even though doctors aren't exactly sure why this happens, multiple studies show that people who don't sleep enough are more likely to suffer migraines. Also, you'll see better if you get enough sleep. We don't function well without sleep. Our bodies get tired and our eyes get tired. The longer you stay awake, the more vision errors you'll make, ranging from tunnel vision to seeing double, to even, eventually, at scary levels of sleep loss, hallucinations. You'll be less likely to catch a cold. While going out in the cold doesn't make you more likely to catch one, being exposed to one does. But if you haven't slept before being exposed to a virus, your weakened immune system makes you much more likely to catch it. When researchers exposed a group of 153 people to the common cold, those that had been sleeping less than 7 hours a night were almost three times more likely to catch the virus. You're less likely to develop certain kinds of cancer. People who do shift work, night shifts, and have disrupted cycles and thus don't sleep enough are likely to encounter some serious health problems. One association that researchers have found is that night workers are more likely to develop colon and breast cancer. You'll be less easily irritated or upset. When you don't get sleep enough, you're more emotionally volatile and more easily irritated. A little thing can make you blow up or ruin your morning even more. According to a study published by the Israeli research team, sleep deprivation amplifies negative emotions caused by small things like interruptions. People feel less pain after a good night of sleep. Not getting enough sleep makes people more sensitive to pain, which can lead to a terrible cycle for chronic pain sufferers. Tests show that keeping people up all night makes it easier for them to feel pain. There's even evidence that not getting enough sleep can interfere with the pain relief process of certain drugs. By the same token, getting good sleep can function like low pain medication. And people who sleep have fewer heart problems. One large study found that sleeping 5 hours or less a night was associated with 45% increased risk of heart attacks. Keeping people awake increases their blood pressure. Even healthy young men who have one bad night of only 3.6 hours of sleep show significant temporary changes. So, get some sleep. This certainly can help in all of your areas of life. And with that, it's time to get on the phone lines for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week, 330-370-1590, 330-370-1590. We're going to take caller number four. I'm going to ask you three multiple choice questions, and you win breakfast at Bob Evans, 330-370-1590. Caller four. We'll be right back.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590 with more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week. And Sandy, who's our contestant?
We have Joanne Krebs on the line.
Good morning, Joanne.
Oh, Joanne, there you are. We can hear you now.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Same to you.
All righty. Are you ready?
Oh, as ready as I'm ever going to be.
Okay. Joanne, of course, the big talk over the last few months has been oil and the gas prices. If you remember, not so long ago, everybody was concerned because oil reached $140 per barrel. When did that happen? Was it September of 2007, April of 2008, or June of 2008? When did oil reach $140 a barrel?
I'll say June 2008.
Absolutely correct.
Good.
Yeah, and everybody was worried it was just going to continue going on up, and that's when we, you know, of course, got those gas prices hitting $4, and it just went up so fast, and everybody was just panicking, and look where we are now.
Yeah, really.
Back down to $2.
Somebody's in control.
I won't say a word. You know, nobody out there is a conspiracy theorist anymore, are they?
They're just the people my husband works with.
My next question for you is the 52-week low for a 30-year mortgage. This is the national average mortgage, according to what the Wall Street Journal says. The 52-week low was what? 3.72%, 3.81%, or 3.87%?
This is
for a 30-year mortgage on your home, conventional mortgage.
Okay, could you say it one more time?
Sure. The 52-week low was 3.72%, 3.81%, or 3.87%?
I'll say 3.7. Is that the first one?
3.72 was the first one.
Uh-huh. That's the one I want.
That's one. Not quite that low. 3.81 is the lowest point that they reached as a national average in the past year. You know, for those of us that lived through 1981 and 82, when if you wanted to buy a home, you were going to pay 17-18% interest. Whoever thought that we would see rates ever this low?
Right.
And it certainly for anybody out there, particularly, you know, the young people, boy, go out there and lock in those rates, because I don't think you'll ever see these rates again this low. But anyway, my last question for you is this year has been kind of a mixed bag of returns for all kinds of indexes out there. And I want to know this year which index performed the best. Was it the Dow Jones Industrial Average Transportation Index? Was it the New York Stock Exchange Pharma Index? Or was it the S&P Mid-Cap Index? Which one did the best this year? Dow Jones Industrial Average Transportation Index, the New York Stock Exchange Pharma Index, or the Standard & Poor's Mid-Cap Index? Which one did the best?
I'll say the Pharma, the middle one.
Well, that'd be a good guess. They did 15% this year.
But.
There's always a but, isn't there? But the Dow Jones Industrial Average Transportation Index.
Oh, my. I didn't think transportation did that well.
They did a whopping 24%. And a good reason for that is, of course, energy prices. The gas prices came down. So that was part of what made transportation even more profitable. But their index is up 24%.
Wow.
Yeah, real nice, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't think they got that high until the end of the year now. But it's still 2014.
Yeah. It's not just the last quarter, but I'd say probably the last 5 months is really when we've seen oil prices really start to fall and start to make a considerable difference in a lot of industries. And we just saw that transportation index go up and go up and go up, and it performed quite nicely. But the pharma index, Ed, you invested in that too. Hey, I'll take a 15% return any day of the week.
Really?
But, Joanne, I want to thank you for being our contestant.
Hey,
and,
thank you.
We're going to send you out your card for breakfast to Bob Evans. I hope you had a Merry Christmas, and I hope you have a great New Year's.
Thank you. I did, and same to you.
All righty. You have a nice weekend. Well, how'd you do?
I actually guessed on that transportation because it seemed like the one that was the least likely almost. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, so... And the housing one I did okay, but yeah, not so much on the others.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, good questions, though.
Hard or easy?
I would say mid.
Mid?
Mid,
okay.
Yes.
That's where I try to keep them.
Yeah.
I don't want them too easy. I don't want them too hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, it also drives home the point because I think what you do so well is to make financial news more relatable. And when you talk about things like, you know, why is the transportation thing, you know, doing well? Because of gas, you know, that makes it more, realistic, or, you know, like more easy to understand because,
okay,
you know, why, you know, and how it's affecting your real life. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Anyway, as we approach the new year, of course, New Year's resolutions come to mind. And I think the most helpful hint that I ever got and that I try to share is don't try to come up with 10 things you're trying to improve yourself with, although we could all use them. Come up with one. Come up with one. Focus on that one. This way you have the best chances of accomplishing that goal and improving that one particular area in your life. Think about it. Come up with one resolution and then work on it very diligently, and you will have success on accomplishing your goal. So good luck, everybody, on your New Year's resolutions. Have a happy New Year's. And as another show comes to an end, it's been a great pleasure to share the past hour with you. We always welcome the opportunity at Capital Financial Group to work with you as your personal financial advisor. Let us help you to eliminate the worry. If you need help with financial planning, rolling over a 401k or a 403b, trying to understand the markets, get a financial plan, managing your portfolio in retirement, that's what we do and what we specialize in. We work primarily with those that are retired or near retirement. Give us a call. Our number is 330-668-6991. That's 330-668-6991. Thanks so much for having us in today, and we'll see you next Saturday at 7 right here on Money Talks. Have a great week.
Been Money Talks with Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group. This program is informational only and should not replace a financial consultation before investing your money. Registered financial advisors are key toward a balanced and responsible financial policy. This has been a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its parent company, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.